68. After the clean, cool air on the open sea, the smell was like entering the monkey house of London Zoo. The land masked the breeze and the frolic of the surface chop died away. As the torpedo boat groped its way into the delta, the miasma of the swamp spread out to meet her. "My God, that smell!" Sebastian twitched his flattened nose. "Brings back pleasant memories." "Lovely, isn't it?" agreed Flynn. "We must be almost into the channel." Sebastian peered into the night, sensing rather than seeing the loom of the mangroves ahead and on either hand. "I don't know what the hell I'm doing on this barge," grunted Flynn. "This is raven bloody madness. We've got more chance of catching a clap than finding our way up to where Blucher is anchored." "Faith, Major O'Flynn, and shame on ye," the commander of the torpedo boat exclaimed in his best music hall brogue. "We put our trust in you and the Lord." His tone changed and he spoke crisply to the helmsman beside him. "Lay her off a point to starboard." The long nose of the boat, with the torpedo tubes lying like a rack of gigantic champagne bottles on her foredeck, swung fractionally. The commander cocked his head to listen to the whispering soundings relayed from the leadsman in the bows. 12 fathoms, he repeated thoughtfully. "So far, so good." Then he turned back to Flynn. "Now, Major, I heard you shooting the blarney to Captain Joyce about how well you know this river. I think your exact words were, 'like you know the way to your own thunderbox.' You don't seem so certain about it any longer. Why is that?"
"It's dark," said Flynn sulkily.
"My, so it is. But that shouldn't fluster an old river pilot like you."
"Well, it sure as hell does.
If we get into the channel and lay up until the moon rises, would that help?"
"It wouldn't do any harm."
The exchange seemed to exhaust the subject, and for a further 15 minutes, the tense silence on the bridge was spoiled only by the commander's quiet orders to the helm, as he kept his ship within the 10-fathom line of the channel. Then Sebastian made a contribution. "I say, there's something dead ahead of us." A patch of deeper darkness in the night, a low, blurred shape that showed against the faint sheen of the star reflections on the surface. A reef, perhaps? No, there was a splash alongside it as an oar dipped and pulled.
"Guard boat," said the commander, and stooped to the voice pipe. "Both engines, full ahead together."
The deck canted sharply under their feet as the bows lifted. The whisper of the engines rose to a dull bellow, and the torpedo boat plunged forward like a bull at the cape.
"Hold on, I'm going to ram it."
The commander's voice was pitched at conversational level, and a hubbub of shouts broke out ahead. Oars splashed frantically as the guard boat tried to pull out of their line of charge.
"Steer for them," said the commander pleasantly, and the helmsman put her over a little.
Flash and crack, flash and crack. Someone in the guard boat fired a rifle just as the torpedo boat struck her. It was a glancing blow, taken on her shoulder, that spun the little whaleboat aside, shearing off the protruding oars with a crackling, popping sound. She scraped down the gunwale of the torpedo boat, and there was left astern, bobbing and rocking widely as the larger vessel surged ahead. Then, abruptly, it was no longer dark. From all around them, sparkling trails of fire shot into the sky and burst in balls of blue that lit it all with an eerie, flickering glow.
"Skyrockets, be Jesus! Guy Fawkes, Guy," said the commander.
They could see the banks of mangrove massed on either hand, and ahead of them the double mouths of the two channels.
"Steer for the southern channel."
This time the commander lifted his voice a little, and the ship plunged onward, throwing out white wings of water from under her bows, bucking and jarring as she leapt over the low swells pushed up by the outflowing tide,
so the men on the bridge hung on to the handrail to steady themselves. Then, all of them gasped together in the pain of searing eyeballs as a solid shaft of dazzling white light struck them. It leapt out from the dark wedge of land that divided the two channels, and almost immediately two other searchlights on the outer banks of the channels joined in the hunt. Their beams fastened on the ship like the tentacles of a squid on the carcass of a flying fish.
"Get those lights!" This time the commander shouted the order at the gunners behind the Lewis guns at the corners of the bridge.
The tracer that hosed out in a gentle arc towards the base of the searchlight beams was anemic and pinky pale, in contrast to the brilliance they were trying to quench. The torpedo boat roared out into the channel. Then there was another sound, a regular thump, 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 like the working of a distant water pump. Lieutenant Killer had opened up with his quick-firing pom-pom. The 4-pound tracer emanated from the dark blob of the island, seeming to float slowly towards the torpedo boat, but gaining speed as it approached, until it flashed past with the whir of a rocketing pheasant.
"Jesus!" said Flynn, as though he meant it.
He sat down hurriedly on the deck and began to unlace his boots. Still held in the cold, white grip of the searchlights, the torpedo boat roared on with 4-pounder shell streaking around her and bursting in flurries of spray on the surface near her. The long, dotted tendrils of tracer from her own Lewis guns still arched out in delicate lines towards the shore, and suddenly they had their effect. The beam of one of the searchlights snapped off as a bullet shattered the glass. For a few seconds, the filaments continued to glow dull red as they burned themselves out. In the relief from the blinding glare, Sebastian could see ahead, and he saw a sea serpent. It lay across the channel, undulating in the swells, bellied from bank to bank by the push of the tide, showing its back at the top of the swells and then ducking into the troughs, long and sinuous and menacing. Lieutenant Killer's log boom waited to welcome them.
"Good God! What's that?" "Full port rudder," the commander bellowed. "Both engines full astern together."
And before the ship could answer her helm or the drag of her propellers, she ran into a log 4 feet thick and 100 feet long. A log as unyielding as a reef of solid granite that stopped her dead in the water and crunched in her bows. The men in the well of her bridge were thrown in a heap of tangled bodies on the deck, a heap from which the bull figure of Flynn, Patrick O'Flynn, was the first to emerge. On stockinged feet, he made for the side of the ship.
"Flynn, where are you going?" Sebastian shouted after him.
"Home," said Flynn.
"Wait for me."
Sebastian scrambled to his knees. The engines roaring in reverse pulled the torpedo boat back off the log boom, her plywood hull cracking and squeaking, but she was mortally wounded. She was sinking with a rapidity that amazed Sebastian. Already her cockpit was flooding.
"Abandon ship!" shouted the commander.
"You damn tootin'," said Flynn O'Flynn,
and leaped into an untidy tangle of arms and legs in the water. Like a playful seal, the torpedo boat rolled over on its side and Sebastian jumped. Drawing his breath while he was in the air, steeling himself against the cold of the water, he was surprised at how warm it was.